Distinguished Chair, thank you for the opportunity to make some remarks this afternoon as we continue these important discussions. Over the course of the past several days' discussions on norms, rules, and principles of responsible behavior, there have been a number of countries that have expressed support for the U.S. commitment not to conduct destructive direct ascent anti-satellite missile tests. The United States greatly welcomes these statements of support for what we believe is an important first step in reducing the risks to the outer space environment, while also increasing trust among states. The United States looks forward to working with others to determine how best to multilateralize this commitment. We believe this commitment is an important step because, as Professor Wong discussed yesterday, no treaty prohibits the testing of this type of anti-satellite weapon. Nor is this type of testing prohibited by any current arms control proposals. The draft treaty on the prohibition of the placement of weapons in outer space only purports to prohibit the threat or use of force when it comes to terrestrially based weapons. Nowhere does it prohibit the development, testing, or deployment of these ground-based weapons. I also regret that some colleagues doubt the strength of our commitment. The U.S. has considered such commitments for a number of years, and it has become clear to nearly all those who depend upon space that the ongoing use and long-term sustainability of the space environment is critically endangered by the increasing amount of destructive testing of direct ascent anti-satellite missiles. As Dr. Steer mentioned this morning, making these types of commitments, including them in strategies and doctrines, could be an important step to limiting this threatening action. And so I would welcome further discussions to address any concerns about this. This commitment is also not about impeding the ability to conduct peaceful uses of outer space. The language was chosen precisely to avoid restrictions on the debris that is created during routine space operations, such as during launch. Those activities are covered by the widely accepted debris mitigation guidelines. Instead, we are focused on the security aspect of the action. The destruction of a satellite orbiting the Earth caused by the launching of a missile from the ground, air, or sea, which has been demonstrated to be the most pressing threat to all countries' use of space. As discussed this morning, we cannot predict the future potential for collisions with this debris. Satellites are already being forced to essentially dodge or duck the debris from the most recent anti-satellite missile test, and it is impossible to predict what will happen months and years from now. And we agree with calls that we should not limit ourselves to this one commitment, and that is precisely why we are here. This is a first step, and we welcome substantial discussions on other norms, rules, and principles over the course of this open-ended working group. But nonetheless, we believe it is an important first step that can demonstrate progress by the international community. The United States also recalls that history has shown that commitments like this can form the basis for future arms control agreements, though it is also shown that such negotiations take time. The evolution of the provisions contained in Article 4 of the Outer Space Treaty provides an excellent example of how commitments by countries can be transformed by action in the UN and eventually incorporated into an international agreement. The path to the Outer Space Treaty began in 1960 at what was then known as the 10-Nation Disarmament Committee, and also later that year at the UN General Assembly, when the United States proposed an agreement on prohibiting the placing or station in outer space of weapons of mass destruction. Following several years of discussions bilaterally and in the 10-Nation Disarmament Committee, on September 19, 1963, Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko told the General Assembly that the Soviet Union wished to conclude an agreement banning the orbiting of objects carrying nuclear weapons. In order to demonstrate momentum on this issue, less than a month later, by October 17, 1963, the General Assembly unanimously adopted a resolution welcoming the Soviet and U.S. statements and calling upon all states to refrain from introducing weapons of mass destruction into outer space. This resolution, along with the Declaration of Legal Principles governing the activities of states in the exploration and use of outer space, adopted later that same year, would go on to form the basis for the main provisions of the Outer Space Treaty. Though it took several years to complete negotiations on that treaty, which entered into force in October 1967. That example shows why we should recognize that diplomacy takes time and that jumping straight to negotiations of a legally binding instrument without the work to develop norms, rules, or principles will all but guarantee that our efforts remain at an impasse. That is why we believe the most pragmatic way to demonstrate progress is to identify measures we can take now to reduce the risk of damaging the outer space environment, reduce the potential for misunderstanding, misperceptions, and miscalculations, and to increase trust among member states, which is critical to progress on this important issue. And it is through this OEWG's inclusive process that we can make progress on these issues, including advancing other ideas for norms of behavior that can make progress regarding security risks and threats in space. As such, we welcome others to review our commitment not to conduct destructive direct descent anti-satellite missile tests, and to join us in taking this first step towards ensuring the safety, security, stability, and long-term sustainability of the outer space environment. Thank you.